still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
You're listening to WIOX Radio, and this is Health Center in the Catskills, and I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program. Well, more than 200,000 residents and staff in nursing homes died during the pandemic. Some nursing homes did better than others, and nurse staffing has been found to be one reason why. But we knew before the pandemic that nurse staffing in nursing home matters. We have reams of research documenting that staffing makes a difference in the quality of care residents receive and the outcomes of that care. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which we're going to refer to as CMS, of the federal government, recently released a long-awaited final rule that would set federal minimum staffing standards for nursing homes. But the home care industry has been pushing back and trying to undo this rule. Here to talk with us about this rule and the pushback is Dr. Elizabeth Halifax, a registered nurse and assistant clinical professor in the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of California at San Francisco. Her career has been focused on care of older adults, first in the United Kingdom and now in the United States, including conducting research and holding leadership positions in long-term care and nursing homes. Let's see here. And she is also a consultant on training and nursing home staffing issues and a legal expert witness on cases related to nursing homes. So she's highly qualified to be talking with us today. She's also an executive board member of the National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, an organization that provides national education, advocacy, and policy analysis for long-term care residents. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me on Health Center in the Catskills today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with talking about what's in this final CMS rule.
Well, so the rule has to be put in the context of the 1987 Nursing Home Reform Act, which stated that nursing homes must provide nursing services, and I quote here, to attain or maintain the highest practical physical, mental, and psychosocial well-being of each resident. So that's the bottom line. Nursing homes have to provide quality care for their residents. This new rule, however, will be the first time that specific nursing staffing standards have been implemented, and they provide a mandate for minimal staffing levels. Just to explain a little bit, I suppose I should, that nursing time is split between three disciplines: registered nurses, which I'm going to call RNs, licensed professional nurses, LPNs, and Certified Nursing Assistants, or CNAs. And one of the things that's happened with this ruling is that LPNs have been ignored, despite the prominent role they play in nursing homes, because they provide a high proportion of licensed nurses, which is both the RNs and LPNs, and they undertake vital work, often passing medications and providing treatments. So the new rule requires each nursing home resident, on average, to receive a minimum of 3 hours and 29 minutes of nursing care each day. And that sounds, if you're thinking about the 24-hour day for a nursing home resident, it doesn't sound a huge amount, but it is below levels of recommendations that have been before. For example, CMS had a recommendation in 2001 that was just over 4 hours of total nursing a day. Yes. And the levels that are being set, the 3 hours, 29 minutes, the new ruling, are actually below what the average nursing staff levels were in nursing homes in both 2019, before the pandemic, and 2022, after the pandemic. So this means that the minimums that are being set are below the recommendations, which would have reduced missed and delayed care and below what's actually being on average given across the industry. The final ruling has been a really big compromise. It will only improve staffing in homes with the lowest staffing levels. And sorry, Karen.
Keep going.
Oh, okay. So despite there was a rigorous regulatory process and there was a staffing study and hundreds of responses to CMS, many of which supported a higher staffing level. But I would just say that there is some good news. I mean, it's always nice to end on that note with a question. And one of the things is that RNs are now expected to be in nursing homes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's terrific because it will provide clinical expertise and leadership around the clock. And it also provides a minimum staffing standard. That means it's not a ceiling. So this is actually what nursing homes have to meet at the very bottom level. And so they will still have to staff according to the needs of the residents, as the Nursing Home Reform Act that I mentioned at the beginning asks. So that's looking at residents' acuity and their care needs and staffing to that level. And it's important that our audience understands is that when they have a resident, that resident is assessed for that acuity and they are reimbursed. The nursing home is reimbursed at a level given that acuity. Mm-hmm. So they are receiving the money to staff at the level that the residents need.
That's a great point. I also want to point out, I believe this is correct, that the 1987, there was a 1987 rule. Is it 87?
Yes.
Yeah. That arose largely because of some of the horror stories that had made their way into the media about nursing home care and how poorly the residents were treated and what terrible conditions they were in. Am I right on that?
You are correct. And what's really sad to me is that we still hear of those horror stories. You know, I mean, residents going missing because no one's observing them, going out into the freezing cold. You know, things have got better, I think, since 1987, although I wasn't resident in the US at that point. Mm. But I do feel that, you know, we haven't really, it didn't meet its promise.
So tell us a little bit about some of the evidence. These are evidence-based rules, regulations, although they fall short of what, as you said, they fall short of what the evidence would really recommend. But tell us what we know about the impact of having RNs, LPNs, and certified nursing assistants in adequate numbers to care for nursing home patient residents.
Well, we have a lot of research evidence, so it's evidence-based research. We've collected, that's myself and Dr. Harrington, who've been working together closely for a few years now, more than 100 studies that show that increased staffing, especially of RNs and CNAs, lead to better care and fewer adverse incidents. And by that, I'm talking about things like falls, developing pressure ulcers, developing infections, and also higher levels of staffing prevents delayed and missing care. So we're talking there about delayed care might be that a resident is sitting in a soiled diaper waiting to be changed, or missed care could be something like missing a dose of a medication that they need. So there's plenty of studies that explain that. And even CMS has commissioned two studies in 2001 and 2022 that also support these findings. So, you know, I feel that there's a NASEN report, which is the
National Academy of Medicine, Engineering, and Science,
did the report last year, which also, you know, came to the same conclusion. So there is lots of evidence about staffing matters.
So why is CMS putting out a rule that doesn't meet what you think, where we believe should be the standard, the minimum standard? I mean, we're going to take it, but because it at least sets a minimum standard, but why that compromise?
Well, the compromise is really because the nursing home industry does not agree with the ruling, and it has its own ways of arguing the opposite view. And they do that really in three ways. There's a lot of effective messaging that they do through the media and through lobbying. And I would say that the main arguments they use are the perpetuation of the idea that there's no one to hire into these jobs, that we can't have higher staffing levels because there are no people to do the caring. My answer to that would first of all be, if we don't have the staff to safely care for residents, we should not be admitting residents to nursing homes.
Yes.
It would be dangerous.
Yeah.
So that's before we even get into the nitty-gritty of it. But the real problem is that it's not that there's no one to hire into these jobs. The problem is that the jobs are of poor quality. You know, many of these people, something like a third of CNAs, that's certified nursing assistants, receive public assistance in addition to their wages because they're so poorly paid.
Yeah.
And they, very few of these people have healthcare themselves.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, if you're working in an environment with low staffing and a high staffing turnover and mandated overtime, well, you have to make the choice of staying and leaving your family and staying for a second shift so that the residents aren't neglected. There's a lot of stress, moral distress, and burnout. And so the turnover is really high in nursing homes, well above 50% in two studies that have been found.
Yeah.
And even beyond that, the physical work and the dangerous working conditions in nursing homes are well documented. Being a CNA is only second to being in the construction industry in terms of injury.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, on this point, there are similar entry-level jobs for CNAs with better-paying conditions. You can get a job in a fast food restaurant for the same money and for a lot less stress. I mean, probably a lot less meaningful, but, you know, there are options for people.
So
that's the first argument that the industry used, you know, which is about staffing.
And what other arguments are they using?
Well, so the second one is that they, you know, they say, well, reimbursement is insufficient. We don't have enough money to pay more staff. And that nursing homes, as a consequence, will have to close. And this is a threat that's constantly used. However, we know that there's little accountability for how nursing homes spend the reimbursements that they receive. And there is evidence that high proportions go to what we call related party companies. So that's the system where the owner of a private nursing home owns the nursing home and owns the building. And then he or she charges himself above market rent for that particular facility. And so at the end of the day, it looks like the nursing home has made less profit, but in fact they're paying themselves over the odds. And they do this with multiple outlets like, you know, housekeeping, food supplies, nursing agencies, pharmacies. You know, they set up all these companies and then they pay themselves above market rate. And so that they also provide themselves with profits and administration, which are above other medical organizations like acute care hospitals. Acute care hospitals are not allowed to spend above a certain percentage on profits and administration, but there's no such ruling or nursing homes.
And I think we've got about 70% of the nursing homes are for-profit, not non-for-profit, right?
Yeah, I mean, the majority of nursing homes are for-profit. And if you look at not-for-profit nursing homes, many of them, are, on average, are much better staffed.
And the for-profit, well, I think what I read was that on average, nursing homes had a profit margin, I want to say it was like 2 years ago, of 9%. And so the argument that this is going to bankrupt us is really a false one.
It really is. And, you know, I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't employ more staff and pay better wages and give better conditions with those sorts of profit margins.
So let's talk about what the industry is doing to try to, they're using these arguments and trying to undo this rule that's already in place. How?
Mm-hmm.
How?
Well, I think I already mentioned the effective messaging.
No, but I mean the court case and the congressional action.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. So how are they doing? Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
So the first thing is they're using legislative action.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been the introduction of two resolutions in Congress, HJ Resolution 139 and SJ Resolution 91, and they've been brought in under the Congressional Review Act. These would do, they would not only repeal the proposed staffing standards and prevent the administration from ever developing any federal staffing standards. So they are trying to really negate the whole idea of this new ruling and say that it's not appropriate for the federal government to impose nursing home staffing regulations.
Even though most of the funding comes from the federal government through Medicaid and Medicare.
Indeed. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty cheeky, to say the least.
It is. It's very cheeky.
It's very cheeky. And then the second tactic that they're using is there's a lawsuit that has been brought in Texas by the American Healthcare Association, which is the name of the lobby group for the nursing home industry. And it's interesting that they've chosen Texas. Mm-hmm. The Bloomberg reported recently that Texas is a super place to go to shop for the judge you want for the verdict you need. So we feel that that's one of the reasons they've gone to Texas. And the aim of this lawsuit is to dismiss the new staffing standards on the grounds that implementation is not practical and that CMS is acting beyond its authority. And, you know, I just can't help but think that, you know, while this lawsuit is going on, it takes time and focus and money away from what's needed, which is adequate and appropriate care for the residents. Yes. If they put this kind of effort into caring for the residents that they have into opposing this ruling, it would be pretty fabulous.
Yes. Now, what are the odds of the congressional legislation moving forward or the lawsuit being successful?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to this. I would say that this particular ruling is already a major compromise for those advocating for quality care like us. We would like to see this ruling passed, even though it's been a compromise. And we know staffing standards are needed where 75% of all nursing home residents live without sufficient staffing to take care of their needs. And we know that the new staffing standards are achievable because 60% of nursing homes and most non-profit nursing homes already reach these standards. So the idea that it is out of their reach to meet these rulings is really ridiculous. But I really don't know what the answer is. I don't know enough about the legislation and the politics. But I will tell you that I'm on a call every day this week with a different representative and a coalition made up of a number of groups, lobbying representatives and explaining our side of the story.
So we have a very good nursing home in Margaretville called Mountainside Residential Care Center. And it's a five-star now, nursing home. And in New York did pass minimum staffing law, I want to say, last year. And it resulted in this nursing home having to close beds because they didn't have enough staff. Now, they're working to recruit more staff as well as to collaborate with other partners on training more people to be certified nursing assistants, as well as looking at how to recruit and prepare LPNs and RNs. And and so they're expecting that they're going to be able to open new beds, beds back up. There is such support for this in the community. It's incredible. So what are your thoughts about how nursing homes can do better to recruit staff during the, and by the way, so they closed the beds, and that was very encouraging to hear that that was the effect that this law was having, because as you said, why are we keeping beds open that are making care unsafe when we don't have enough staff? And so what are your thoughts around how nursing homes can do a better job with improving staffing during what is a challenging time in terms of workforce across all healthcare?
I definitely think it is challenging, especially in a rural area where your work pool is much smaller. I would just say that the fact that they close beds is a very good sign. I mean, they understand, you know, that that's what's needed, and so this sounds like a really good nursing home. But I would go back to what I said about recruiting workers, is that you're not going to, you know, I hate that phrase, but if you pay peanuts, you get monkeys, you know. You have to give people worthwhile working jobs with reasonable hours and set schedules. I mean, there are things you can do. Apart from good wages and benefits, you can give regular assignments and hours. You can be really flexible about the hours you give, you know, particularly women, as the majority of workers are women, who are looking after families. In England, we used to have something called job shares, where two people would take one job and they could switch off however they liked. Oh. You know, we would allow them, as long as one of them showed up. You know, that
nice.
Those kinds of flexibilities that we don't see.
Yeah.
And then once they're in and staffed, you know, they need to get continuing training, because that enriches their lives. It makes them more capable. It makes them less anxious and stressed. And then there's the other thing, is prospects for promotion. You know, even CNAs should be encouraged, you know, maybe to go on and do a qualification or take extra certificates, become a team leader. You know, there are things you can do. And what this comes down to is feeling valued and being allowed, you know, to have some autonomy over your job, not just to be a little, you know, to really investing in your staff. One of the other things we do see is that unionized nursing homes, where people are allowed to organize, are much better at retaining staff. Mm. And I think this is because they feel they belong, and there's a sense of belonging there. So those are some of the ways you can do it. But I think that the idea of training, I would just mention that these rulings are coming in with a significant time lag between 3 and 7 years in rural areas. Mm. So, you know, three yes. in most areas, and then in the most rural areas, up to 7 years.
Yeah.
So this is not something we're going to expect to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
We have got this period of time which is allowing for that training and that recruitment to occur, and where nursing homes can start to build up their staffing so that when they are implemented, they will be meeting these standards.
Elizabeth Halifax, we have an aging population in the county I'm in Delaware County and in this region, and so there are a lot of people who care about this issue. They want to make sure we have a really good nursing home, and there's such community support for it. What would you advise people to do who might want to be engaged in checking on trying to let the nursing home industry know that they do not want this kind of pushback on the rule?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, we can all play our part. And I think you mentioned at the beginning that I am on the board of the Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care, which is a rather clunky name. But if you go on the web and you look for the consumervoice.org, you'll find their website. And they are great, because not only do they have terrific one-pagers giving information on all sorts of topics related not just to nursing homes but other long-term care, like assisted living and board and care, all those sorts of things, but they have a lot of actions. And if you sign up for their emails, I would encourage you, if you're really interested, to become a member. But sign up for their emails, you'll get alerts telling you what progress has been made, what changes have happened, and how you can contribute by contacting your representatives. So that would be the first thing I would suggest. The second thing I would... The second thing I would suggest is that if you have a loved one or you yourself are in a nursing home, then you can talk to the New York Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Now, I myself have been a volunteer ombudsman for 5 years out here in San Francisco, and I would say that it's a difficult and very rewarding privilege to be a volunteer in this role. But you can contact your ombudsman, and what ombudsmen do is they visit nursing homes and they advocate for people living there with their permission. Mm-hmm. So to give you an example, probably a lot of the time I get, you know, talked to about how cold the food was when it arrived, or there was no coffee available, small things like that. And, you know, I would go down to the kitchen and I would talk to the staff, and I'd come back the next week and find out if anything had changed. But then sometimes it was something dramatic, like the man who was sweating and shivering, and then I realized that he had not had his dose of narcotics, that he had a cancer, and, you know, he was expecting to have his medication, and they'd run out. And I was able to, you know, bang on the door of the director of nursing and say, you know, this is completely unacceptable. Please fix this now.
Yeah.
So the long-term care ombudsmen are great, especially if you're looking for advice on nursing homes, or, you know, really have somebody already in a nursing home that you have questions about. And their information is always posted in every single nursing home. And if you look up long-term care ombudsman New York, you'll find their website.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Elizabeth Halifax, you're a wealth of information on this, and thank you so much for your advocacy on this important topic. We need more people to be concerned about what's going on with nursing home. I played When You're 64, it's Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Love Me? Will You Still Need Me? And indeed, for the older population, it's a question to ask of society. Will you still love me? Will you still need me? And will you care for me? So, Dr. Elizabeth Halifax, who is a assistant clinical professor in the Department of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of California at San Francisco, registered nurse, and really a long-term involvement in long-term care. Thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Yep, she's very good. I'm very pleased that we had her on today. It's really an important topic. Well, I'm Diana Mason, the host of Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio. My time is up. Have a great day.